Hi, this is Brian the Build Bunny, and you are watching This Week on Channel 9.
Okay, thank you, Brian the Build Bunny. Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. We'll talk about who Brian the Build Bunny is a little bit later, but I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Ed Keim.
And let's get to it. So PDC, the PDC registration is live, MicrosoftPDC.com. I've got my PDC 2005 shirt.
Always a milestone.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I'm really excited for that. So you can go register for PDC. Are you planning to go?
I hope so.
Yeah?
Yeah, I haven't booked travel yet, but, you know.
Some PDC. Guys actually, we've launched a site, I think, Tuesday night. And we already had some people sign up and register for the conference, like within the first 10 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Well,
PDC is huge. I mean,
oh, yeah.
it's a milestone. I mean, I speaking in a speculative way, of course, PDC seems to drive product releases more effectively than anything else in the company.
It is a good forcing function.
It does. Yeah, it seems to be, all right, everyone's going to be ready with the next CTP by PDC.
Exactly.
It's like the big driving factor. So it's always nice to know when that next stake in the ground is.
Yep. And the two guys that registered, the first two people to register, they were from the Netherlands.
No way.
So I have to think that the fact that we devoted last week's show to Amsterdam, or the fact that Dan is in
Amsterdam. Dan's over evangelizing. Yeah.
Yes. So probably
not,
has something to do with it.
Entirely a boondoggle. Now there's some shareholder value in his trip.
Exactly. So the next news, we have a new video on two new videos on Channel 9 talking about the improvements that were made to MSDN, the website, and TechNet, the website,
yep,
as well. So lots of really good stuff in here. Have you had a chance to play with it at all?
Yeah, I did. I played around a little bit. One of the nice things that I always find is that there's always a very smooth transition between versions. Like, you're not just kind of left in the lurch and finding stuff. And so that's a good part to it. And I think a lot of the improvements are transparent to people. Like, they're not going to notice, like, some of the improved experiences around finding information on the site. Because there's just so much stuff in MSDN and TechNet. I mean, just huge amounts of data.
My favorite feature, and this is something that was there before, but it wasn't really usable, just because it wasn't all that performant. Now you can go into the MSDN search text box, and you can just start typing, and it will do the autocomplete for you, kind of like the IntelliSense.
Oh, I didn't notice
right?
that.
It's I think
very cool.
I was talking to Justin Grant. He said it's somewhere in the order of like 40 to 80 times faster than what it used to be.
Wow.
And so they're pulling a database of just, you know, thousands of search terms that you can start typing AASP and it'll give you the .NET MVC controller.
Oh,
whatever.
That's cool.
Yeah. So good stuff there. A couple of videos up there for you to check out. Also, another really cool video. This one's been quite popular. Lots of Niners commenting on contract-oriented programming with SpecSharp.
Mm-hmm.
So SpecSharp is essentially, this is a research project, so it's not something you can go rush out and use today.
And the licensing reflects that at this point, right? There is a research license around it for how you can use it.
Well, actually, this one hasn't been, you can't get your hands on SpecSharp today.
That's right.
You're jumping ahead to another news story.
That's right, the other one.
But SpecSharp is an extension to C# that allows you to set constraints, basically. So let's say that, you know, anytime this particular variable is called into this method, or this method is called and you pass in a particular variable, that variable has to be non-null, or that variable has to be, you know, greater than 5 or something along those lines, so that you can constrain your output and write better
and
quality
it
programs.
It also simplifies the process of writing these things. And another nice thing is, not only do you not have to put, you know, the check for nulls inside every single method, but the tool support becomes better. Because before, you know, there weren't really tools that I know of where you can say this method always requires this is a non-null, non-empty string as a parameter.
Right.
But with SpecSharp, that capability is now there. So the design side is going to be a lot better.
Yeah,
over time.
It gives you warnings. The IntelliSense reflects that. The little squigglies that you get. And actually, let's go to a clip of the video that talks a little bit more about SpecSharp.
Is warning us about a possible null dereference, which is actually our type checker in SpecSharp, warning us about that we're dereferencing the SRC field whose type is string, which then allows it to have the value null. And this is one of the things that we find is a great benefit of using SpecSharp, that you get the non-null warnings about possibly null things at compile time. So. Should I go on and show? What we would like to do is change the type of SRC. The type of it here is just string, which then allows it to be null. And we can change it to be a non-null string, which in SpecSharp you do by adding an exclamation point. afterwards. So SRC is now declared to be a non-null string. Now we get a complaint in the by the type checker inside the constructor, which tells us that that the conversion from the source string that we got as a parameter into SRC might fail because it might be null. And this is something that programmers face all the time with parameters that may or may not be allowed to be null and may or may not be passed in as null. And in this case, the compiler, the type checker, tells us that, that there's a problem if it's passed in as null. We could write some defensive code inside the constructor, but in this case, a better way to handle it is simply to change the type in the constructor to say that we're accepting only a non-null type string.
So really cool stuff, about an hour-long video if you want to check out the whole thing on Channel 9. Which, speaking of code quality, takes us to our next news item.
Yes, some of the automated exploratory testing for .NET tools coming out of Microsoft Research.
Right.
In this case, PEX, which stands for, I believe it's Program Exception, or Exploration.
Program Exploration, right. Right.
Exceptions
right.
are what it's for, is to help you find, you know, obviously problems in the testing. And this is a pretty cool concept. I had never really thought about this idea before, but the ability to kind of automate your automated testing in a way, like it just kind of improves your code coverage and improves the a little bit of more randomness inside the testing to,
right.
to test the edge cases, so you don't have to manually go through and come up with every single scenario. And obviously, you still want to have great, you know, code coverage from
right.
when you write your test. And there's good tools in Visual Studio and other tools out there. But I'm pretty excited to see where this is heading. You know, I can see this obviously. Must end up in Visual Studio down the road.
I hope so. Yeah. Now, this is the one you were thinking about for the research
yes,
only
the researching
license.
License.
Right. So you can't use this in commercial projects yet. But I talked to the team. I emailed them yesterday, and they said, "Hey, this is something we're talking to the Visual Studio team test team about. Hopefully, this will be a sanctioned power tool or make its way into the official product in the future." No plans, obviously, to announce around that yet. But it is cool because you can go in here and you can define a unit test, and let's say you have an add method for two ints, right? Right, X and Y, and it can then expand on that unit test by adding 0 and 0 to see if an exception is thrown, or what are the upper bounds for those two integers, what happens then. So it's really a way to quickly generate you know, test cases that will say, does your code, you know, have exception cases.
Yeah. Another nice thing about it is it sort of is a beginning to an approach of the problem people face when they write unit tests for their own code. Because often people take it for granted that a method wouldn't be called with a parameter. And we build a lot of developer API stuff, and we have to consider the idea of these of constraints that have to go into methods. So lacking something like Spec Sharp in the tool set immediately, tools like PEX in the future are going to help to make it so we can ensure that almost unanticipated input,
right.
things we didn't even think to put in the unit test directly,
right.
could now be tested for, because it literally does explore. It's kind
right.
of like randomly saying, well, what happens if we throw this at the method?
Yep.
And you can react to that appropriately.
Yep.
So very cool stuff there.
So yeah, definitely. Another news item. So, you know, we talked about the .NET Framework 3.5 SP1. And one of the things that's new there is the idea of a client profile. So, you know, the .NET framework in and of itself, it has a lot of server libraries that, you know, you may not need if you're just writing a simple click once, you know, accounting application that's gonna connect and, you know, do whatever, right?
Yeah.
But today, if you're going to write an application that uses any part of the .NET framework, you have to deploy the entire .NET framework to that machine. So the idea with the client profile is that you can say, all right, I'm going to build an application that's only going to use a subset of the capabilities in the .NET framework, kind of like the .NET Compact framework, but not that small, right?
Not so, quite pared down that deeply.
Exactly.
And, one of the big questions people come up with, though, is to say, well, what exactly is in the client profile? And fortunately,
I'm glad you asked.
That question is now answered, because Justin Van Patten's gone out and actually blogged about this and
right.
said, this is the stuff you can expect to see. And I think from a client-side developer perspective, it's everything you need. I mean,
I think so, yeah.
Server-side stuff, you know, you might not use, like ASP.NET controls
right.
probably aren't part of your client-side application. So
right. There are some differences between what you see in the beta and RTM, but Justin goes through and outlines that for you. The other nice thing about this is that this is supported within Visual Studio. So if you go into your project properties, you can say, I'm building an application that uses the .NET Framework client profile, and then when you compile your code, it will throw any warnings that tell you, hey, you're using libraries that are outside of mm-hmm. what's available in that client profile. So good stuff, Justin. Now this next one, this is kind of fun. This is a blog entry that Mark Brown made, where he talks about what's called the UltraCam. And we're actually very lucky. He gave us a prototype of the UltraCam to use here in the studio. So you can go ahead and, you haven't seen this yet.
No.
So go ahead and, you know, take a look at it. But the UltraCam
prototype.
Yeah.
But held together with
that's
tape.
Tens some of thousands of dollars you're looking at right there. There's
some patents got to be behind this thing.
I mean, it's the most sophisticated camera in the world. Basically, let me read off some stats. It's a 216 megapixel camera.
That's okay.
All right. Takes basically 1.7 terabytes of images can be stored. Dude. What is your man, what is this? You need to get out of here, man. So anyway, as I was saying about this camera, it's 216 megapixels. It has multiple processors within this to just deal with all the input that's coming in. So really cool. You can read more about it on Mark Brown's blog. So what do you think about that, Ed? Pretty cool? Yeah? Yeah, for sure. So so let's go on to the next news. So this is another project that I found on Code Project. I know you're on there all the time, right? And this is hand gesture recognition using aForge.net. And so this is a library that helps you do motion capture and motion recognition. And so he basically does, takes you through, this is Andrew Kirilov, takes you through an example of how to use this application or how to use this library for building a hand gesture application. So if you wanted to do semaphore or something like that. And I think the hand gesture in and of itself is rather limited in the use case. But what's interesting here is that he takes you through step by step of how you would approach that particular problem set, right? So really cool. So this is another. Actually, I don't know much about the Windows Live agents. This was a slide that you were going to talk to, right, Ed? Oh man, I think we're going to have to get Ed back in here. Are you going to stop breaking stuff?
Live agents. This is actually a big announcement this week from the Windows Live team. They've kind of gone public with the Agents SDK, and folks who may be more familiar with the term agents as bots. And with the Live Agents SDK, which you can use, you can write basically a server-side component that's hosted. I believe at this point it's intended to be hosted by Microsoft, and there's kind of an ISP sort of agreement in place there. But you can write stuff that interacts with users. So I could run a company that maybe I want to automate my FAQ through the Windows Messenger interface. So I can set up this cool app, and it's it was using BuddyScript. I think I'm not sure if the naming changes there or if the programmability changes all that much moving forward. But with the current version of the SDK, you can now write pretty much whatever you want on the server side, and you can check out some of the cool other agents that are out there. For example, there's an Encarta agent that is we'll put the URL or rather the email address for the live ID on the site, so people can go and they can add that to their buddy list, and they can have a conversation with this bot. And it's very entertaining because it's not as simple as just sending off text. It really has a conversation with you. When you ask it for things it doesn't know, it says, well, maybe you're looking for this, and it'll open up an activity window in the sidecar. For example, if you ask for a map of something, it'll show you that and places of interest and all that cool stuff.
Can it initiate a conversation with you if it's on your friends list?
I don't know, actually. I would be a little worried.
Yeah, if you install the Amazon bot.
That'd be super clippy. All of a sudden it's like, oh,
it looks like you're buying from a competitor.
I see you browsing the web. Are you sure you wouldn't rather use Live Search?
Exactly. So that's pretty cool. So they can go download this. There's an SDK that they can download.
There's an SDK. I forgot to check directly. I mean, we happen to have something in place. We've done some work with the Live Agents stuff.
Okay.
But I don't know if the SDK is a free download or if you need to set up a relationship ahead of time. I'm pretty sure there's no cost to start developing, but if you want to deploy, then there's a price of entry just for the sake of quality control.
Got it.
And not all bots that get built are going to be deployed out, because obviously there's a certain
quality
expectation
gate.
Of quality that's out there.
Yeah. Awesome. Good stuff. So that brings us to Picks of the Week.
Picks of the Week.
What do you have for us this week, Ed?
So my Pick of the Week is actually a Preview 3 release of the ASP.NET MVC framework. This is some cool
preview
stuff.
Preview 1 and 2 didn't do it for you, but Preview 3?
Well, you know, I wasn't on the show those weeks. And so finally, Preview 3 was my one chance to get out here and start talking about it. And I'll tell you, I mean, straight up, it's not ready for like commercial development. And, you know, it's still in a preview. And
there's no go-live there.
Yeah, there's no go-live behind this. But this is really cool from a couple different perspectives. The main goal of this project, at least, you know, through what I've seen so far, is to take the MVC model, the model view controller paradigm of development that many people are familiar with on a client side, and in some regards a kind of middle tier respect you can develop in that model, but being able to take this to using it for building ASP.NET applications. And one of the nice things that happens here is not only do you get some of the goodness that MVC brings in terms of the cleanness of code and the ability to componentize what's your data model versus what's your controlling logic versus what your UI view layer is, but also every time a partial reset is done for part of a platform, you see the opportunity for the engineering team to add in more goodness. Mm. And so what I've been excited about is not just the MVC stuff, but there's also all these cool little features that are starting to just become part of what's considered this baseline. And you'll notice one of the things that's most obvious, I think, is this RESTful-like URL syntax. And I don't think you're required to use it necessarily, but it's nice to have a site where you can say mysite.com/products/view/4 or maybe edit4 or whatever. And that tells the server, you know, there's a certain way of dealing with the current request. And then you write your code behind, or I shouldn't say code behind, you write your code in the controller that actually manages how the view gets rendered and all that. But the point behind all this is that it's really cool stuff. And if you want to get started with it, you should definitely go and check out Scott Hanselman's blog because he's got a whole bunch of really cool videos out there. And really, the beginner videos are important because they're not beginner web developer videos. They're really beginner MVC videos.
Right.
So it's not intended, you know, to start from ground zero. It's to say, you know, anything from Scott pretty much assumes you're already pretty hardcore into development.
Right.
And this is just saying, this is what you need to just bridge the gap between that and where to get in the preview today. So
excellent.
All around cool stuff, and I'm pretty excited about that.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, that brings us to my pick of the week, which we alluded to at the beginning of the show. This is Brian the Build Bunny, and I know it sounds a little funny, but you know, we talked about Team Foundation Server has this team build capability that you can use to build your software on an automated basis, rather, you know, either it's a nightly schedule or every time you check in or some, you know, medium blend in between, maybe every 10th check-in you build. It's always kind of boring to look at just an HTML build report and see whether or not your build was successful. Wouldn't it be great if you had a automatic, you know, robotic bunny that could do the same thing? And so,
you know, I've thought that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I grew up dreaming about this, and the day has finally arrived. So Martin Woodward, who is one of our team system MVPs and is the developer over at Team Prize, who does the Java client that connects to Team Foundation Server, he went out and he did just this. He built the robotic bunny, and he has a really entertaining video that is also educational because it teaches you how you would wire up events to Team Foundation Server. So let's go ahead and take a look at the video that Martin put together.
My name is Brian the Build Bunny. I am watching your every move. I am connected to Team Foundation Server. I watch for new builds. When a build fails, that makes me sad. So please, make your builds successful and then I can be happy. Now, let my creator, Martin, show you how I work.
Hi, this is Martin. Right then, we've got Team Foundation Server and Brian the Build Bunny. Brian's actually an off-the-shelf robot bunny from a company called Nabustack. They provide a HTTP-based API for talking to the bunny. To connect Brian to Team Foundation Server, we create a web service and subscribe it to the powerful eventing system in Team Foundation Server. Our web service gets the events from Team Foundation Server and sends a HTTP message to the Nabustack servers over the internet. Then NabusTag uses XMPP, which is also known as the Jabber IM protocol, to instantly send the messages to Brian. Brian actually connects over Wi-Fi to my router so he can be anywhere in the office. Let's see him in action. Let's take a project we've got bound in TFS. This project has a build definition already defined with a continuous integration trigger, so it'll build automatically on every check-in. We'll add a unit test, check it in, and we'll watch Brian's reaction.
Martin just checked in with the comment, added a unit test. Build of billing service successfully completed.
So good stuff. Hope to see even more creative uses for wiring up robotic bunnies.
That's some cool hardware too.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that probably my favorite part is the incredibly obfuscated path it takes to program the robot. not so much that it's hard to program it, but the fact that you have to send a satellite signal around the world,
yeah.
it would seem, in order to have the bunny get excited. But whatever it takes, right?
Now, I think what a great enhancement to this would be, because I think the bunny can actually move around. It would be great if whoever broke the build, it goes to their workstation.
It finds them.
Definitely.
Some sort of Terminator bunny.
Oh, yeah. No one would want to face the wrath of that. So anyway, nice work, Martin. Thanks for sharing that with us. And that just about wraps it up. TechEd 2008
next week
in Orlando. So Dan and I will be there.
I think it's good. You know, I was wondering, if you're going to have a conference in June, what better
place than
Orlando?
In the world, yeah.
Which is almost as good as the Worldwide Partner Conference coming up next month. I think some folks might be headed there. July, of course, Houston.
Oh, excellent.
It's better.
Yeah.
And then PDC is being held later on in the year. I think it's October or November,
yeah,
right? We had
Los
the timing
Angeles.
For that. Originally, it was supposed to be in August. And
oh,
it was going
right.
to be held in a volcano
right.
while it was active, just
excellent.
Because.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're thinking about PDC 03, where all the fires were ravishing Los
oh, yeah.
Angeles. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not funny.
Yeah.
That was pretty awful back then.
But anyway, if you guys are going to TechEd next week, look for Dan and I. We'll be roaming around with cameras. We'd love to talk to some Niners. And... that's about it.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I love this week on Channel 9. Please, sir, may I have another?